1029 The Hog presents another Bob and Brian podcast.
This Bob and Brian podcast is brought to you by Marcus Theaters. Safety and well-being of guests and associates are top priority. Temporarily closing was the right thing to do, and when timing is right, the movie experience will return. Updates at MarcusTheaters.com.
Time to talk music news, music happenings, what's not happening with our music expert, Gary Graff. Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. Hanging in there, healthy, safe.
Now, I'd ask if it was a busy week, but I think it was in the opposite direction as far as cancellations and things go.
Yeah, it's interesting. What's happening is what's not happening, although, you know, sadly, you know, so much of the news in the past week, you know, has become, you know, what musicians, you know, have COVID-19 and even more sadly are passing away from it. Big one this week, two made big headlines. One was Adam Schlesinger, part of Fountains of Wayne. Stacey's mom was their big hit, but he was actually better known as the guy who wrote the songs for That Thing You Do, the Tom Hanks movie, and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend on TV, and he had a Broadway musical that he did John Waters' Cry Baby for Broadway, and also had teamed up with Sarah Silverman for The Bedwetter. So, and just a super nice guy, you know, in addition to being amazingly talented, just a great guy.
That's some pretty prolific songwriting right there.
Oh yeah, no, he was. The level of talent was amazing, and like I say, it's all the more tragic that he was such a nice guy and young at 52 as well. We also lost Ellis Marsalis, who was the patron of the Marsalis family, Winton and Branford's father, Joe Diffie, country singer, Alan Merrill, the guy who wrote I Love Rock and Roll. He was part of an Australian band called Arrows. And Wallace Rooney, great jazz trumpeter. Francis Ford Coppola's uncle, Anton, is a conductor. He passed away from COVID-19 complications, although he was 102 years old as well. And then on the ailing list, we thought we were going to lose John Prine early last week, and then he seems to have recovered. DJ Jazzy Jeff is apparently in bad shape right now. Ray Benson from Asleep at the Wheel has it. Pelle Almquist from The Hives and Gary Holt from Slayer, you know, all have been at least reported to be, you know, diagnosed with COVID-19. So, you know, and then on top of that, you do have tours postponing, canceling, moving. Foo Fighters' Green Bay date moved from May 10th to October 15th. Steve Miller Band is postponing their tour. You name it. Anything certainly through April, and now we're getting into May and even some of the summer dates since we spoke last time. Roger Waters has pushed back his tour probably into 2021.
All right.
You talked about John Prine. He was critical earlier this week. How's he doing?
Apparently his wife has posted that he has stabilized and seems to be on the mend. I mean, he's had a lot of health issues, heart, cancer, and, you know, everybody, you know, frankly did think this was it for him, but apparently he's rallied and he's still with us.
And Jackson Browne, you had him on the list last week.
Yeah, as far as we know, he's recovering, you know, as expected.
How old is Jackson Browne?
Jackson is, 70. What is he, I think like late 60s.
Okay.
67, 68, I want to say.
Okay.
So you know, this is what's news and entertainment now, and certainly it's impacting in TV and movies and everything else. So I had an interesting chat with one of my Live Nation sources the other day, and we were just talking about when are things going to come back, and what he told me was keep your eye on Major League Baseball. And he said that's what the entertainment world is watching. When Major League Baseball gets the green light to start up again, that's when you're going to see concerts start happening and other things in the entertainment world.
Now,
right now, they're talking about July 1st.
This may be a stretch, but I can tie it into music news. It's dominating entertainment headlines. Joe Exotic, he put out a couple of CDs, right?
Right.
And I said in here before we knew this, I said, you know, he doesn't seem like he's that talented, but when they play his discs, he sounds pretty good, and Carrie agreed. Well, we found out this week that that wasn't even him singing on his on his discs.
Correct.
So there's nothing, not even musically, has he got any redeeming values.
No.
That's just, he's just horrible all the way around. Jackson Browne is 71, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So
I thought it's that baby face that throws you.
He really has aged well, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can see the, you can see the crevices and such now, but
that's okay. He's 71.
He's 71.
If he had those at 21, then you go, geez, Jackson, this could go really bad for you.
And he still sounds great. I mean, Jackson looks at 71 like Keith Richards looked at 28. So.
Don't say that in front of Keith Richards.
He doesn't care. What does he care? He's outliving all of us.
There's other things going on.
There are.
You just have to look for them, I guess, because you got the new National Recording Registry songs that were announced last week.
That's always nice, to see what songs are being inducted into the National Recording Registry this year. And we have some good ones this year and interesting ones. For instance, YMCA is going to be
favorite of Packer fans.
Pardon?
A favorite of Packer fans.
Oh, a favorite of, all over the place, really. I Will Always Love You, the Whitney Houston version. Dr. Dre, The Chronic. Tina Turner, Private Dancer. Fiddler on the Roof soundtrack is going in. Wichita Lineman, A Cheap Trick at Budokan, and the broadcast from the 1954 Dodgers-Giants playoff game, baseball game.
The Giants win the pennant.
Bobby Thompson home run, the Giants win the pennant, the Giants win the pennant broadcast.
Boy, that could make it into, if that gets into the National Recording Registry, that's got to qualify it for the sports.
They really don't divide it up. It's called the Recording Registry, and so it's recordings. And so there are the Hindenburg disaster, for instance. The humanity is in there. A number of other news and sports things are part of it, as well as music.
It's just, a way of telling our history with the recorded...
With recorded sound, sure.
Okay. So you've got the Hindenburg in there, and the next thing up on the jukebox in there could be YMCA.
I know, it's kind of... If you put it on random play.
You put it on shuffle.
It's going to be quite a shock.
What is this? Yeah.
You brought up Whitney Houston there with the songs going into the registry. Dionne Warwick, her aunt, is not happy.
Not a fan of the hologram.
Not happy about the Whitney hologram tour that was going on.
No, the Evening with Whitney show, which is now, of course, not happening in England. It was on a British tour, but got sidelined by coronavirus. But it did play a few shows to very tepid reviews, and one of those who doesn't like it is Dionne Warwick. She did an interview in Britain where she basically calls it a waste of time. That Whitney's legacy and music speak for itself, that there's no need for something as ghoulish as this to be out there, that we should just enjoy the music, enjoy the recordings and whatever videos Whitney left behind, and not try to recreate her. But waste of time is the takeaway from it.
Well,
do you concur?
I do.
I mean, I haven't seen it, so, but in general, I'm not into the hologram thing.
And the thing about Dionne was she was plenty strange during her career too. Didn't she do psychic commercials?
Oh, yeah.
And
she
stuff like that.
Dionne Warwick Psychic Network.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's had her eccentricities, shall we say? Listen. She's. I think there are people from the family who are actually behind the hologram. So I don't know if this will cause a family schism or not. But
well, I think, if you you want to see a live show, you go see someone when they're live.
When they're alive.
Makes you appreciate life maybe a little more.
It's kind of the whole point.
Instead of just saying, nah, I'll see the hologram later.
Yeah, that's kind of the whole point of going to see a show is, I saw them.
Yeah,
I saw
the live human
being. Exactly. So, we'll see. I mean, everybody's looking to make a buck, and this is a way to do it with those who aren't with us anymore.
Well, it's finally here, Gary. We've been clamoring for it for years. The Helen Reddy biopic.
It actually played to good reviews at the Toronto International Film Festival.
Is there a story interesting, compelling?
It's called I Am Woman.
Yeah, of course.
And it's about, it's about Helen Reddy. It's the biopic, and its distribution rights are now being sold, so we're probably going to see it either in theaters or, you know, or on video on demand, whichever is going to be around by the time it's ready to go out. And, you know, she has a compelling enough story. I mean, the everything that happened around I Am Woman, I mean, we don't know everything about the heat she took after that song came out, because it was not necessarily a popular sentiment. It was certainly in tune with the times for women, but, you know, you had the patriarchy that was not buying into it at all, and we can argue still doesn't. But, you know, but so she took some heat for it.
We studied that song in seventh grade literature class.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember doing that, too.
And American Pie were songs that we broke down and decoded and went, now, wait, who is this, and what's this guy? Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, apparently, though, the I Am Woman film, it's a breakthrough for Tilda Cobham Hervey, who's the Australian actress who plays Helen Reddy. And it did, like I said, it did play to pretty good reviews in Toronto.
So what are we looking for time-wise before this hits some sort of platform where we can see it?
They haven't announced yet, but certainly if the rights are being sold now, you know, again, the rules are changing. Usually you set it up for several months of run-up before the film hits theaters. If they're not going to be coming out in theaters, we could see it tomorrow. But I suspect sometime during the summer.
Well, when can we get the Flava Flav biopic?
Isn't this going to be great?
talking
about train wrecks and also being hoodwinked. So here's the order of
events. I don't feel like I was hoodwinked because I didn't care.
Yeah.
Either way, it was like, okay, fine.
But they rolled this story out that it was all a hoax on April Fool's Day. So was that the – okay, go ahead.
Nobody knows what's true and what's not. But the order of events was that Public Enemy – was supposedly booked to be part of a Bernie Sanders rally in California earlier this year.
Right.
Turned out it was really just going to be Chuck D. So Flavor Flav went on he's the guy who wears the clock, by the way, and the sunglasses.
Oh, we're aware of Flavor Flav.
If anybody out there is like, Flavor what? You know, we ought to at least let them know that. But, you know, so he went on this rant and, you know, sent a cease and desist order to the Sanders campaign. You know, and then Chuck D came out and said, "Well, yeah, Flava Flav, we're moving on without Flava Flav." You know, basically saying they had fired him. And then this week, Chuck D goes on a podcast to say, you know, nah, we really didn't mean it. We were just trying to get everybody's attention. Basically, acting like it was an April Fool's joke, or was saying it was an April Fool's joke, the April Fool's joke. Flava Flav popped out after the Chuck D podcast appearance saying, no, I'm not part of your hoax here, you know, saying in so many words, you suck, you know, and that there's more important things to be doing now than hoaxing people and talking about dropping new albums and all that. So,
I'm sure when they thought of it a while ago, they thought, well, this will get some attention. This will be good.
Yeah.
This will be fun.
No, they did, and in the rap community, the hip hop community, it might. I don't know. It's, you know, give us a really good new Public Enemy album. That's what we want. forget the other stuff.
I still have that picture. Our friend Joe Panos was walking through a casino in Las Vegas, like 4 or 5 in the morning one time, and ran into Flav and got a picture with him. And I don't have it on my phone. I was going to send it to you. And Flav has the big clock around his neck in the casino, middle of the night, early morning, whatever. So he's been we're well aware of Mr. Flav's work.
Oh, yeah, he is. No, he's a great character. But, so, like I said, give us good new music and we'll be happy. By the way, a little breaking news that just popped up on the email, the James Taylor tour with Jackson Browne this summer has been postponed. New dates to TBA
for several reasons, obviously.
Yeah, and this is what days are like right now. Is you get any number of these popping up.
Right.
Should I be concerned? And you tell me. I think this is a red flag. Richie Sambora is selling his publishing rights.
It might be a signal to buy stock in Hypnosis Songs Fund. That's the song fund that Richie Sambora is selling his 106 song catalog too, and that would include his share of the song Bon Jovi songs like You Give Love a Bad Name, Living on a Prayer, Wanted Dead or Alive, etc., etc.
I have a question. If I'm selling those, is it bad form to just sell them, or should I offer them to the other person who gets a credit on that, like John Bon Jovi?
That's an interesting question. I mean, they are still, and who knows, maybe he did go to John first and say, hey, here's what I'm going to do. Do you want to buy them from me? You know, do you want to give me what Hypnosis is going to give me? Because I'm sure part of the sale to this Songs Fund is not only do you get the upfront payment, I'm sure there's some percentage of what they're able to do with it in terms of licensing. And this is a major company. I mean, they have songs by Taylor Swift, Timbaland, and Bruno Mars, among others. So, you know, this is not some, you know, this wasn't a quick cash-in on Richie's part.
Do you have a dollar amount?
No, that wasn't reported.
See, that's what I want to know.
I'm sure it's seven figures, you know. Now, whether it's seven figures with a one and a bunch of zeros in front of it or seven figures with a bigger number, you know, we don't know.
Well, I've never heard a story where somebody sold their publishing rights and they were unbelievably happy about it down the road.
Well, they just don't talk about it now, because it's not like the old days where you sold it to survive. Now you sell it because there's a professional investment company, you know, fund that's backing it. So you never heard David Bowie, and you haven't heard his estate, you know, complain about what he did with his songs. Boy, we're probably going back 25, 30 years.
But David Bowie became a commodity at that point, didn't he? You could buy into David Bowie.
Well, that's it, yeah. So, you know, and basically if you buy in, you know, you're having a chance to buy into Richie Sambora here through this fund.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it really is. It's just a way, you know, it's a way to share the wealth, I guess.
So does he get just a one-time payment for the songs, right? He's not...
Well, no, my bet is that he gets a nice upfront payment and a percentage whatever the fund. You know, he probably gets shares in the fund as well.
Right. It's a nice little retirement plan, isn't it?
You know, especially, you know, listen, if you're getting up to a certain age, if you're an artist in your 50s, 60s, certainly older, why not sell your rights and have the annuity, you know, have that big upfront payment and then the annuity of whatever your songs will do.
Well, then, does like that fund try to go out and get Ford to use a song? Or
okay. Yeah, that's what they do. They find investment opportunities for the song.
That's where you want your songs to go, is to somebody like Ford or Chevy.
Yeah, right.
So you're like a rock with Bob Seger's song that produced. I'm sure he made more from Ford or Chevy than he ever made from, you know, just people buying a 45 copy of it, right?
Maybe, you know, back in the 70s, you made a lot of money from record sales. I mean, a lot of money. So it was probably up there, you know, with what he made from record sales. You know, if you're an artist today, that doesn't happen like it did. But all those classic artists, they made a lot of money, you know, and, you know, from all their royalties, their songwriting and their performing royalties.
What does Bob Seger get from Ozark? Because Tuck is playing it on the jukebox all the time.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, listen, Garth Brooks on two appearances this week played Bob Seger's song.
Bob's doing okay.
You know, yeah, and he's not, you know, and he's retired. So he's got, you know, he's got his.
My favorite Bob Seger line, I never actually heard Bob Seger say. Glenn Frey delivered it in the Eagles documentary. When he said, when it came to songwriting, Seger said, you just got to write songs. And Glenn said to him, what if they're bad? And Seger said, oh, they're going to be bad. They're going to be bad, but you got to keep writing.
Yeah, so, and then the good one, and then the good ones will be what you make your career on.
Yeah, I thought that was, yeah, you're not going to write all Moby Dicks. You're going to.
Moby Dick a song?
Thank goodness.
Sing it.
Moby.
Oh, me is male. The longest song.
Literary trauma.
Hey, Gary, we're all out of time. You know how I know? Because Brian and I are singing.
Thanks, Gary.
The audience away.
All right. Wash your hands.
Yeah, you too.
Don't touch your face.
Stay safe and healthy.
Yes.
All right, man.
Talk to you next week. Gary Graff, our music expert.